welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Fargelon.
I'm DM.
And tonight we're joined by a very special guest.
That's my ghost. Sorry.
I had no idea what he was doing this week, but that went nicely. I'm like, what's he going to do with this movie? There's nothing for him to do.
Tie Doty Walker.
He found a way. That's the point. Seriously, though. Bravo. That's right. We're going to be talking about scary stories to tell in the dark. But first, we got some random crap to look at.
Yeah. Starting with TV, I have finally watched Good Omens.
Oh, isn't it wonderful?
Oh, it's so great. Loved it.
It's such a delight.
I still got to see that.
Oh, you do. You really do. It is just so delightful. I mean, it's such a wonderful book, and they've just done it the most justice.
Yeah. Well, I follow the band, the Christian band, and I just haven't been able to find it on Netflix, no matter where.
Keep looking. It's there. You just got to keep at it. All right.
Damn it, it's just not coming up with my feed or anything. I'm like, where the hell is it?
It's buried deep.
Any particular high points for you, DM?
I don't know. I liked the whole thing. I don't know. I had this good, exciting. Well, I love the book. It's like one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
And I got to meet Neil Gaiman. And that was pretty amazing. Wow. Yeah. I don't know, the whole thing, just as I was about to say and then cut myself off, I just had this good feeling inside every time I finished an episode. Yeah, I don't know, highlights. The whole thing, I think, is just great from beginning to end.
My favorite thing, like my favorite story from behind, I was reading it. I follow Neil Gaiman on Twitter. He's fantastic on Twitter. If anyone, you know, isn't following him, you definitely should. He's amazing. But my favorite story that he told when the show was coming out, because people asked, like, how did they decide on the look for Crowley? And so he said that he described his idea of what Crowley would look like to Terry Pratchett. Mm-hmm. And Terry Pratchett's response was, I don't remember what his idea was, but Terry Pratchett was like, look, Neil, you love this character, you identify with this character, and visually you are a ridiculous person to look at. So we are making him look exactly like you. Black, sunglasses indoors, you know, like the ridiculous goth thing. He's going to look exactly like you, Neil. And
well,
Neil
he's actually
saw
like,
the value in that.
Unsettling to look at with those awful eyes.
I know.
So it's like, I'm really glad he's wearing sunglasses most of the time because he's hard to look at.
No, they're creepy. It's a good effect. But yeah.
Oh, God.
No, but Neil Gaiman is fantastic. And I love that they did it so well. And I mean, I think I was affected a lot by the way he talked about it on Twitter in the 6 months leading up to it, about how much he felt it was just a tribute to Terry, that they do it 100% right. Yeah. And I mean, he feels like they got it. As a fan of the book, I feel like they got it. And wow, it's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. That's on there. And it's there. I know they haven't decided yet. Have they, if they're going to do a season two, it's still kind of in the works.
They're still up in the air. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, so we'll see, but hopefully they have a nice idea for it. All right. So next up, we have movie news. All right. Two pieces of new movie news that are both, one is a lot crazier than the other. So I'll start with the less crazy one first. So the less crazy one is, after the failure of Dark Phoenix, what Disney has decided to do is cancel the entire slate of Fox's films.
Good. Did you go through
everything? Yes.
Holy shit. There's like pages. At first I was like,
300 projects.
It's unbelievable. And in various stages of production too. Yep.
There's stuff that's done. And they're still like, we don't know what we're going to do with New Mutants. This movie's been done for 2.5 years.
Oh my God.
We might never release it. But yeah. Like there was seriously 300 projects in various states of development. Yeah. And they're just like, nope, we're not doing any of it.
Dude, it's not a sign at all to, like, you know, I know we've been saying it all along, but just the pure evilness of the Mouse House, you know, I mean, that is on full display here because, I mean, I'm sorry, but you had to know a little bit about this. And I fail to follow the narrative, to blame it all on Dark Phoenix. I mean, they're the ones that took the wind out of the sails of Dark Phoenix in the first place.
Yep.
Right? Announcing they were going to reboot X-Men and so on and so forth, and, you know, releasing Captain Marvel.
They said you're right, between the Captain Marvel and the announcement that we're just going to bring the X-Men and do our own thing. They set it up to fail. They absolutely did.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a good movie. We talked about it.
I mean, they're blaming it on Stuber, too. I mean, come on.
I know. Did they really
have to be a tentpole this summer?
I know, right? Everybody's dying to see this new film, Stuber.
Yeah,
about an action Uber driver. Like,
yeah, what? And its sequel, Flift.
Like, seriously, a movie that they did no pre-thing, like they had no initial press on, that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, this movie is a complete failure. I guess Fox didn't know what it was doing.
Right.
But Disney's done this to themselves, too. They did it with John Connor. John Connor? No, that's not what it's called.
John Carter.
John Carter, Warlord of Mars.
I was so close. John Carter of Mars.
We know what happened there.
They torpedoed their own project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that movie. It's fun.
It's a really good movie. I'm sorry. I really like that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Dark Phoenix is legitimately a bad movie, but there's nothing wrong with John Carter, Warlord of Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I just thought you guys would like that. And now, the bigger, crazier movie cancellation news, which is Blumhouse got it into its head, and it's like, ooh, that Purge franchise, that's really anti-Republican, anti-NRA, like, anti-red state. We better make one of those, but for people who hate liberals. Like, we want to make a pro-Trump action movie. And so they went, and they made a pro-Trump action movie with the exact same plot. And Trump got so upset that they had made a pro-Trump action movie that they've canceled the movie.
How did he get upset about that? Did he not understand?
No. And you could end that sentence right there.
Did he not understand? Yeah.
And the answer is yes. Trailed off.
Did he not understand how things work?
The thing is, as to quote John Oliver here, when you say, does he not understand, you never have to finish the sentence.
Whatever you were going to say, he
doesn't understand that.
No.
It's a pro-Trump action movie, and he got it into his head. It was an anti-Trump action movie, and he forced Blumhouse to cancel the movie.
Well, it's for the best. Blumhouse shouldn't have done it to begin with. So
I know, it was a bad idea, but you know, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was going to be an acceptable generic action thriller, like those terrible Condemned movies they keep making.
Well, I told you my theory about Blumhouse, right?
Which, what's that?
They're like, title card or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Like for Blumhouse, it has like every horror movie trope imaginable in it. Yes. So there's like a creepy little girl and a scary doll and a chair that spins around in the air. And I'm like, all right. Now you know what you're getting.
Lowest common denominator filmmaking. Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think they really thought that they would suffer the box office because they were going to be competing with the 6 o'clock news here in the United States. So.
It's bad. And I get that it was a bad look, but I don't understand. Like, I understand in the same way that they like canceled all of the, what do you call it? What was the Neighborhood Watch movie called?
The Watch.
Oh yeah. Okay. Should have been easier for me to remember. I remember.
John Connor.
I understand why they canceled all the press for that after the George Zimmerman murdered that kid, Trayvon Martin, right? Like, I understand why they did that, but here, like, it's weird to full-on pull the movie. That's the thing I find strange.
And not even, like, try to rationalize or explain what they were doing. They were just like, okay, you want it, you got it.
You want it, we're just going to go. Well, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you a story later that fits in with that. It was like people just like, it's sometimes things are too complicated to explain, so you just have to let it go.
Like climate science?
No, this was a more specific example.
Oh, okay.
Because we can't let climate science go.
Oh, yeah, half of our country has.
I think that's true for all science.
That's true. Yeah. But no, I was thinking a very specific example happened recently. I read this article, but it's not related to the film, so I'll save it for later. But yeah, the crazy part about this movie is it's like, so Trump completely misunderstands a movie trailer, and now a movie is just not happening. Like, that is what the world has come to.
The
president just is too dumb to understand context. So he's like, okay, well, you know, we're just not doing the movie.
Yeah. Or math. Or spelling, or...
or really anything.
Yeah.
Really
anything ever, I think, is what he doesn't understand. All right, so next up, we watched some movies. Rob?
Yes, on a happier, much, much happier note. I just recently, just as of last night, watched a screener for Blinded by the Light, which is the latest film, and I can't remember the director's name, but he did Bend It Like Beckham. And it was, I am a lifelong Springsteen fan. I am a devotee. I've seen him in concert more times than I can care to count, more times than Trump can count. and you know, it set in the '80s, and this was just, it was a perfect time capsule. It was about a young Pakistani boy who was living in London, transplanted with his family there. And, he's facing some mild and overt racism, and the father lost the job, so on and so forth. And he finds redemption and a possible way out of it through music, and specifically through Springsteen's catalog that a Sikh friend of his gives him a cassette tape. And, you know, it's filled with the laughably bad, 80s fashions of the time. Aww. And, you know, it's peppered with other lesser songs of the 80s, and it can probably go on a little too long, but it's one of those films that just, it lives in its own universe, even though it is set in Thatcher's England at the time. It lives in its own little universe, and it is so just unrelentingly upbeat. And the lead actor, and I'm gonna forget his name. Vivek Kalra is the lead in there, and he is just so boundingly charming and just a very expressive young actor. And you just, whether you are a Springsteen nut like I am or not, I think, you know, there's a, it just kind of gets under your skin, and it's one of those days when everything's gone in the shitter for you. This is just a good film to kind of turn on just to at least perk you up temporarily. It's not life changing. It's not world changing, but it has its own little rhythm to it. And it's really, really charming.
Oh, that is great.
Okay.
To hear.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
That sounds wonderful. And I'm psyched to see it.
Yeah.
I also watched a movie. And it's one I know Rob's seen. I went out and I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, okay. After we talked about it.
After we talked about it, I was like, oh, what the hell? I'll just go.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's weird for this to come after Hateful Eight, which is like the tightest movie Quentin Tarantino has ever made. Mm-hmm. Maybe? Like the most... Yeah. It's just like his tightest and most focused film since Reservoir Dogs. And it's much tighter and more focused than Reservoir Dogs. Like, it's got some cutaways, but only within stories that people are telling during the actual plot of the film. Like, it is 100% locked in that room that all the characters are in. And it's such a great interplay. And so then his next movie is this big, meandering, kind of formless exploration of a guy who's worried he's past his prime.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. Like, I was I didn't know what to expect. I didn't watch any of the trailers. I didn't listen to read any of the reviews. So I had no idea. I knew it was about 69, Charles Manson, Sharon Tate, all of that stuff. But I had no idea what his take was and what the angle was. And it's really good.
There's no doubt. I think, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you would rank them, and I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say it was number
one. That's a longer conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not number one for me, but it is, I know they consistently call it a love letter, but I really think it's kind of an ode to that to that time where, if you think back in 1969 and what was taking place cinematically at the time,
yeah,
it's an ode to a very similar time when him and Spike Lee and Robert Rodriguez and Steven Soderbergh were all kind of breaking cinematic rules, or at least, you know, there was an indie uprising, I guess you could say, at that same time there.
The late 90s, absolutely.
Right, exactly. Mid to late 90s. And then the previous time that it happened was this year, 1969, where you had Midnight Cowboy was X-rated and won Best Oscar, or Best Picture. Sam Peckinpah had the Wild Bunch, you know, Easy Rider. So it was really just kind of, and by that very nature of that kind of independent theme, this felt like no other film of his.
No.
It was, but yet still felt exclusively Tarantino, if not just for the feet that were
I think you, there were a lot of feet in there.
A lot of feet.
But no, and I think you make a strong point because, you know, so much of his stuff is this remixing of what is already like, of other people's visuals and other people's tropes and creating something new out of it. Whereas this time, even though he's touching on that kind of filmmaking, that era, it's also, you're right, him commenting on his own career.
Yep.
In a much more straightforward way than he ever has before. Like, I was a little annoyed in Hateful Eight when he comes in as the narrator. Like, that's the one thing I don't like in that movie. I'm like, dude, we know you directed the movie.
Exactly.
You don't have to remember
that with Kurt Russell kind of punctuating it here and there.
And there's just a couple of things. And like, some of the time you didn't need the narration, but having Kurt Russell come in with that voice, and he also plays a small part in the movie, it works really well.
I agree.
My, honestly, my favorite part of the movie, and I mean, it's not, okay, there's a couple of favorite scenes, but maybe my, the thing I liked most conceptually is how much he's like going all in on the Quentin Tarantino cinematic universe.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because, and this isn't a spoiler or anything, because they don't announce it in the movie. You have to pay attention. But in the movie, the show that Jack Dalton, the Leonardo DiCaprio character, he was on a TV show for 4 years back in the 50s. And it was a popular Gunsmoke-style TV show.
Right.
And it was a show about the character that Samuel L. Jackson played in The Hateful Eight.
In The Hateful Eight. Yep.
Yeah. And just like The Lone Ranger, they've changed it so the real-life guy who was black is now a white guy. But it's obviously he's playing this, because like this little note that Leonardo DiCaprio both starred in a TV show about that character and in a movie about the events of Inglourious Basterds.
Wow.
It was such a nice touch.
Yeah, it really was. I think there was so much to it. And I think to me, probably there's a couple particular scenes, but I think what struck me the most about it is that I have not seen a male friendship portrayed on the screen like this. And I can't even tell you how long, and it might've been Midnight Cowboy, but seldom do we have that, this really lovingly, and he described it so well. And I forget, it was just less than a wife, but more than a sister or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but it really was like this kind of really touching relationship that these two had had, built on a mutual respect for one another. I just really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's a really, it's kind of just an amazing movie, and I would recommend everybody check it out. It's very good.
Yep.
All right. Okay. So, next up.
A list?
I love lists.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Okay, so this week's list is 17 horror movies you had no idea were based on books. Because it has an exclamation point.
I cannot wait to find out how much. Because we did this a couple of weeks ago with whether we knew stuff was based on comics. And it turns out we knew a lot of them were based on comics.
We did. And before I start, okay, this list is from Bloody Disgusting. And I just want to give them a bit of shit. Because either...
Great way to start, by the way.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Learn to embed a slideshow or have all of your posts on one page. Don't have every post a different page.
Oh no. They're famous for that. Oh my God.
God.
And then you have to tab back to the first one. You have to go tab back.
I hate that. Yeah.
Forget. No, yeah. So bear with me here, because I refuse to open 17 tabs.
No. Hey, no one is asking you to do that. That's too much to ask.
So I don't know if this list has any kind of value statement attached to it.
Is it a countdown?
I'm guessing that these are actually alphabetical.
Oh, okay.
All right. So we begin with American Psycho.
How could you not know?
Really?
Everybody knows that.
Really?
I mean, even if you did, and the thing is, if you're a certain age and you live in Canada, you can never forget that was a book. Because I don't know if you know about this, Rob. There was a giant months-long fight over whether they would be allowed to sell that book in Canada. Because it violated our obscenity laws at the time.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you didn't know that? You don't remember that story? Yeah, it was huge.
I don't know that story.
I had no idea.
I thought it was just because you had better taste than to publish something from Bret Easton Ellis.
If only. but yeah, it was like, it was a mini moral panic here in Canada, and it looked like it wasn't going to be legal to sell it. Yeah. So that's why I know that was based on a book. Also, it's Bret Easton Ellis. He's super famous.
Unfortunately.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's happy about it, but it's true.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Next up.
Angel Heart.
I did know that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was a Mickey Rourke geek for a long time there, so I was definitely.
We covered it on the show, and I think we mentioned how weird it was to see a based on a book credit at the start of it, because it's such a cool movie. But anyway, go on.
Why is it weird that it would be based on a book?
It seems so strange that anyone would write that as a novel to me, but. I get it. I mean, it's such a cinematic experience. Yeah. And it made me wonder what it would play like as a book.
Well, maybe it's just a really good adaptation. Hopefully. The book could be awesome. I don't know. Anyway, the next is Audition.
I didn't know that was based on a book. Wow.
No. Yeah.
Cool.
I really can't tell you much about it.
No, it's fine. We haven't read the book.
Well, you can't if you tab ahead 5 pages, I think it's
a... Right? God.
Maybe there's some analysis there. Yeah.
Apparently, the book is from 1997 and wasn't translated into English until 2009.
Oh, wow.
Hmm. Yeah.
So long after the movie was out. I guess it was the popularity of the movie that got it translated.
Maybe, yeah.
Right.
Okay, next, The Birds.
I had no idea this was based on a book.
Yeah.
Nope.
Written by Daphne du Maurier.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I had no idea that Daphne du Maurier wrote an apocalypse novel about birds killing people.
Well, I think it's a short story.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Right?
but yeah, I'm still a little baffled. Wow, way to go,
Daphne. It is a pop-up book, maybe, but...
Yeah. Oh, okay. So crazy. All right, next.
All right, the next. I don't know how anybody could not know this. The Exorcist.
Yeah, no, William Peter Blatty.
Like, I think in this
the third one, that was like the big hook of the third film.
Yeah, that he actually wrote a sequel.
Yeah.
It's the sequel that he actually wrote, and he directed it himself.
That's ridiculous.
Amazing movie, by the way.
Like, that's just insulting, I think, to bloody disgusting
anyone
readers.
Making the list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone, yeah, they don't think much of you, readers of Bloody Disgusting.
You had no idea. I mean, do they think that most of their readers are just drooling on the keyboard?
That is 100% what they think.
Well, they're horror fans, and horror fans don't know anything.
Yeah,
apparently.
A bunch of uncultured losers.
It's got so dark. All right, next up.
That's a stereotype.
That's fine. It's fine.
All right, next is The Haunting.
Of course.
Super famous book.
Shirley Jackson's The Haunting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And remade.
Plenty of people like read that in school. Like, come on, guys.
Okay, well, hold on to that outrage, because the next one is Hellraiser.
Bloody Disgusting. Fuck you.
How are you so bad at this, Bloody Disgusting?
Or maybe Trace Thurman was surprised to learn that these movies are based.
The rest is like Cujo, The Shining.
Oh my god, that would be the best thing ever. If it was 100% Stephen King.
You're not far off. The next is The Howling.
Oh. No, The Howling was famously a novel. I mean, come on, guys.
Christ.
This is really bad.
Oh, here we go. Okay, people might not know about this one.
All right.
I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah. No, I know that one. Lois Duncan.
Yeah. But like, not everybody's into.
I didn't know that.
Teen horror novels. Like,
I was going to say, was it like an R.L. Stine kind of thing?
No, Lois Duncan wrote a bunch of, a couple of teen horror novels. Okay. And then her daughter was murdered and she rebranded herself as, and completely reinvented, sorry, herself as a true crime writer. Because she's like, I can't write horror when there are real crimes out there going unsolved. Yeah. But yeah, that's the story of Lois Duncan, who wrote one really memorable book and then, you know, some other stuff too.
Fading into obscurity.
Yeah. Go.
All right. Jaws.
Are you kidding me?
This is the dumbest list. No, this might be the dumbest list we've ever done. I know that's a really high bar.
Like,
this
Peter might Benchley be the dumbest. Is on, like, almost every year apologizing for that book during Shark Week.
I know, because it's resulted in how many of the world's sharks being murdered.
Yeah,
because he wrote one silly book.
He is forever regretful for that. Oh my God, that is ridiculous.
It's like there are two stories about Jaws. One, great Steven Spielberg movie. Two, the guy wishes he'd never written it. Like, those are the two things people know about Jaws.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, go.
Okay, next we have Psycho.
This is just the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
It really is.
This is the worst list. I mean, I know that this is written for 12-year-olds, but Jesus. You know what? The 12-year-olds this is written for haven't even seen Psycho, so I don't know why I'm trying to defend it. What are you doing, this list?
Jesus Christ.
Okay,
does it have the great story in there?
About what?
That it wasn't a best-selling book, but Hitchcock frigging loved it, so he, in the major markets where it was going to premiere, he sent people out to buy up every copy they could,
yeah.
So no one would read it and know the twist when the movie came out. Yeah.
I'm sure V.C. Andrews' Flowers in the Attic is coming up here, too.
Well, the next one is, and again, people probably actually don't know this one. It's The Relic.
I do know that one because you gave me a copy of The Relic. But that not everyone is going to be given a copy of The Relic by you, so I get it. Yes,
that's true. Yeah. And the movie is so different from the book.
It's because they excised
the main character.
How do you do that?
Yeah. I don't know.
I did not know that one.
Yeah.
It's a great book. I like the movie, awesome. Even though it's terrible.
Yeah, it's an awesome book. And the movie's a lot of fun. You're right.
The movie is fun. Yeah. And the sequel to the book is also really good.
I haven't read Reliquary yet, but I am excited to.
You should. It's great. Okay. Right. Next we have Ringu.
Okay. I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah.
I actually did know that because I have a copy of its sequel, Spiral. Which is a three-dimensional ring. That was the justification of that title.
Okay.
Okay, so Ringu gets a pass because three of us didn't know.
Yeah.
Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, I know that one. Ira Levin, Jesus Christ.
Yes, Ira Levin. He did The Boys from Brazil and he did Rosemary's Baby.
He did Stepford Wives.
Yeah, Stepford Wives. The man was a genius in the 60s and the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
All right, go.
Okay, The Ruins.
I did know that.
I didn't.
I watched that again recently.
The weird part is, I only knew that because I completely randomly last year watched, it came up on YouTube. It was just like, what are the differences between the book The Ruins and the movie The Ruins? And I'm like, it was based on a book? So yeah, if I hadn't randomly watched that video, I
also wouldn't know. Okay.
Right, yeah. Right.
Written by the same guy who wrote A Simple Plan.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Yeah. Okay, The Thing.
Well, no, I mean,
Well, we also have The Thing from Another World on here.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, it's based on a short story, not
a book. I was going to say, isn't that a short story and not a book?
Well, yeah. So is The Birds.
But you're right, so is The Birds. So
we'll give it a pass. Really, but I mean, honestly, there's so many things wrong with this title to begin with. And I wouldn't be surprised if they had like 20 horror movies in the article titled 17 horror movies you had no idea were based on books.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. But I mean, that's one thing that I think a lot of people do know, that was based on Who Goes There. Like, it says it right at the start of the movie.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, last one. Valentine.
Oh. Well, yes. From one of my favorite all-time authors, Tom Savage.
I didn't know this was based on a book.
I didn't either.
I got the book when I saw that it was based on a book. It's interesting. Tom Savage, I have a complicated relationship with the man because he writes terrible novels, but I love them. Like, he is my guilty pleasure novelist.
Now, see, I would rush out to see a film by Dan Savage, written Valentine. But for those of you who don't know Dan Savage is, then you'll have to Google him and read about his...
With Safe Search off.
Yes, exactly.
If you want to know who Dan Savage is. Yes, Tom Savage is kind of amazing. He's my guilty pleasure writer. And his book Scavenger is something I'm obsessed with because it's like this really amazing book that he always has a twist in his books. And the twist this time is so bad that it undoes the entire story. And the funny part is, there's an episode of Criminal Minds ripped off of the book Scavenger. Like, they shamelessly rip off his book. And so I told him about it via email, and he's like, I don't think that's really ripped off of my book. And I'm like, well, choose to believe what you want, Tom Savage. It absolutely is.
Right, right.
But yeah, so yes, Valentine, I did know that was based on a book, because I went out and I tracked down the book, because I thought, because I watched the movie, and I'm like, how could this movie have been based on a book? It's the most generic slasher movie in the world. Do they write generic slasher novels? At the time, I was so naive as to believe they didn't. They do. But the answer is no. There is not one point of commonality between the book Valentine and the movie Valentine. They have nothing in common, not even character names.
Well, I just want to wrap up this list by saying the first comments that you come across at the bottom of this article... Okay. About how insulting it is.
Yes! Yeah. I'm glad we're not just being jerks. I'm glad everybody's right? being jerks about this.
Yes.
Now, excuse me while I go out to see this new movie that was written by this by a brand new writer hot off the press named Mary Shelley.
Did you know that Dracula was based on a book?
Oh, God, okay, right?
So I previewed another list before I settled on this one, and shit you not, Dracula was on that list of like books you didn't know were turned into movies or movies you didn't know were based on books. And it's
seriously?
Like, God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's so insane. Oh, my God. All right. That was beautiful. But you know what? I am glad they adapt books into horror movies because you know what? It gives them this firm foundation to start with. Makes me wonder, are they still doing that?
Probably. I wouldn't know, because this week's upcoming horror movie is called The Dark Red.
Probably not based on a book, then. Probably not. All right, what is it?
Sybil is being held against her will in a psychiatric ward because her claims are extreme. She says her
like
newborn...
Like a Dorito.
Basic. Yes. She says her newborn baby was kidnapped by a secret society to harvest its supernatural blood. She says the ancient bloodline has great powers. It lets you hear other people's thoughts. And she begs the doctors to let her go so she can rescue her child from the cult's dungeons. Is she telling the truth, or is it just mere delusion?
Well, I mean, was her baby kidnapped or not? I think that's a good place to start. Because if, like, her baby's in the other room... Then probably not.
Yeah, I feel like you could easily check up on this. Did she have a baby? Does she no longer have a baby? Do other people know about the baby?
Dude, is like the Where baby just with her ex-husband? Like, come on, guys. It's an easy one to find out. But okay, and is this by anyone notable?
So it is directed and co-written by Dan Bush, who made The Signal.
Oh, the Signal,
sheep?
Okay.
The Sheep movie?
The Sheep movie?
Yeah, don't you remember that? Wasn't there one called The Signal with the Irish film?
I have no memory of this.
Yeah, about the... shit. It was about the sheep that go all psychotic.
What?
Yeah.
There's a movie called Black Sheep about evil sheep that go psychotic.
That's from New Zealand.
But that's from New Zealand. I have not heard of this one.
Well, it was based on a book I read from... No, I'm just kidding.
Jesus, come on. I mean, I remember the movie The Signal. That was the one that was in multiple parts, right?
I have not seen the Signal.
There were different writers and directors, and each one did their own segment of it.
I don't know.
About a signal that turns everyone into murderers, and here's the different
vignettes of that. Maybe I'm mixing them up.
It's possible.
I could be. All right. I keep going.
A Guy from the Signal. Okay, well, I don't know if that's the film I'm thinking of, but at least this one has an interesting premise that, you know, is easy for us to poke holes in just listening to it casually.
Is Crazy Lady crazy? Or
Gosh, I wonder if we'll find out that she recently stopped taking her medication.
Yeah.
That would be a fresh twist. Anyway. All right. We did all go to see the same movie, though, so let's now turn a weather eye towards Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
After Stella steals a book of scary stories from an air quotes haunted house, she soon realizes the book itself is kind of haunted. It writes its own stories, each one about the death or disappearance of her friends. And I've actually kind of forgotten how the movie ends, so the synopsis concludes.
Do you want to hear the sad part? We saw this together, like, 4 days ago. Yeah. And as I sat down to get ready to pour this contest, I'm like, what are we talking about today? It has, like, completely disappeared from my mind. And it's been 4 days.
Yes, we are recording on a Tuesday. We saw this on a Saturday afternoon.
So. Hopefully Rob, who saw it just 3 days ago, but yeah, I think is trifle the right word? Like just it's like a candy and you take it and then it's just gone.
Waffle. You know, just,
yeah. Like well yes. It's just, you know, it's just out of your mind.
Yeah.
That is how I feel about this movie.
How do we want to start it? I'm game for whatever. I give it points in that you could feel that they really tried here in some respects. And by that, I mean, like the setting the time, you know, and they really hit home with, you know, it being 1968. And to look at some of the scenes were, I mean, it was beautifully shot. The cinematography.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Bar none. And you could see, Guillermo del Toro's fingerprints all over this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially
that one monster.
Especially the pale lady.
No. The pale lady. Yes. I was thinking more the jangly man.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
both of them were like vintage.
And I thought it would be Doug Jones, but it was not.
It wasn't?
No, he was not in this at all.
That's crazy. I just assumed it was him doing the motion capture.
Same here. And most of it wasn't even motion capture. There's another one that I just found out. I watched a little behind the scenes on there. No, it was actually an actor in a suit that was digitally enhanced afterwards.
Oh, wow.
All of the backwards crawling, that was done by a very
flexible actor. Creepy to know.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, and the weird part is,
creepy monster to begin with.
He's creepy enough, but I feel like if they hadn't sweetened it so much and let us be like clear that it was just a guy in a suit, I would have actually found it creepier to visually know that that was a real person doing that.
Right? Exactly.
There is so much CG sweetening on that guy. I thought it was a 100% digital character done with motion capture.
So did I. And then I read a little bit about that afterwards because I was like, man, that's a shame because he's usually, you know, Del Toro is usually, he prefers that, you know, latex and.
Yeah. Well, that's where he started, so.
Right, yeah, right.
He loves his effects.
And that's actually what it was. And I can't remember the actor's name, but they showed him in various stages of costuming. And man, it was actually creepier watching that than it was
the screen.
Yeah. But, I felt like there were so many little bits and pieces of this that were done with care, even down to the 50s sci-fi films that she had, posters that she had.
That was nice.
Had in there, and the shout outs to Kubrick in some of the scenes. But it just went into that generic Amblin kids, you know.
Yeah, it's Super 8. Super 8 kind of experience.
Here's the problem, though. Explorers, I think,
Goonies, you name it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But part of the problem with the movie, like, I'm great for an adventure film involving kids. Yeah. All, like, love it. However, this movie, I don't think it's towing the line or straddling the line, I guess is probably a better way to describe it, between being a kid's movie and being a movie for like teens and adults.
Yes. Well,
because it has a 14 rating here in Canada.
Right.
And so there's like a minimal swearing and like it's scary, but it isn't like super violent or really super gory.
Right.
And it doesn't know which side of that line it wants to be on. Cause it's about kids who are probably like 15 or 16.
Yeah, yeah.
But the situation that they're stuck in, I think it calls for a bit like more maturity than what they can really bring.
Not only that, but also the setting too. That's what I go back to that, because I wasn't quite sure who they're aiming it towards, because you know that if the target audience was going to see this, which was, it was PG-13 here in the States, half of them were rushing back or on their phones in the theater, Googling 1968 and Wikipediaing, you know, what the Vietnam War when draft Nixon and all that, because it made, you know, the draft.
Yeah, there's no context to it. Yeah.
No context.
No, so, and it just assumes you already know all this stuff. And seriously, what 14-year-old today knows about draft dodgers?
Yeah.
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 That's completely disappeared from the cultural lexicon.
And I was waiting for that guy to be way more sinister than just a draft dodger.
I kept expecting him to be the villain.
Right?
Like, yeah. Or at least be related. Like, he was a family member of somehow. Like, he was her illegitimate son or something.
Or he's got some other, his own scary story. So it's just like, so in addition to this movie doesn't really know which side of the line it's on, I also feel like they're either like we're seeing a lot, it's like almost like a palimpsest of different versions of the script.
Okay.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Sarah Bellows, she was this girl who was locked away in the house, and there's like all this sort of myth built around this scary house and children who died, and the house is haunted by the ghost of Sarah Bellows, and she reads you a scary story and then you die. Mm-hmm. All right, that's great. But then you find out, and we have her book of scary stories, and the book is possessed or it has its own agency.
Yeah.
But then you find out later in the story that there was a maid in the house whose initials are also SB. So I think at some point in the development of this story, the maid with the SB initials, I think that was supposed to be her book and her scary stories and not Sarah Bellows.
And that was going to be the twist.
And it never came.
No.
So,
There's this moment where she goes and she returns the book, and then the draft dodger comes to her house, and then mysteriously the book turns up, and I'm like, oh my god, is he working for the ghost? Is he like a descendant of them, and it's his job to make sure this stuff keeps happening? And then, it's just teleported. Like, okay.
It seemed like it was almost like one of the demons in it itself to bend over backwards to try to merge all of this together, because like you said, the book was cursed and it was full of the ghost stories, but then she also lured children in and she killed them with these stories by reading through the walls, but then new ones kept coming up and getting written, and then our main protagonist also wrote scary stories as well too. Some of those stories though were based on dreams that some of the kids had, you know. Yeah.
And that's the weird part. The scary stories she's writing are based on either their nightmares or the scary stories they themselves already heard or knew.
As a young child. Yeah. So I felt like, okay, there was somehow, there were like two versions of this script that kind of got merged together as one. And that's why even the ending of it felt as kind of empty as it did. Because I feel like there's so much more that was out there, including wrapping up, as we said, the draft dodger, and I can't remember his name, and that's how much Ramon. Who you talk about mixing your messages there. His whole thing was being antagonized by the police department for being a draft dodger, and how we get these constant visions that war is wrong. Nixon has a swastika painted over it by vandalized by someone in town.
Yep.
And then he becomes the hero at the end by going to war.
Yeah.
Right. Jesus.
And his brother, you know, he mentions how his brother came home in pieces and
yep.
came home in a body bag.
And by the way, his brother came home in pieces. And then I thought the jangly man was going to be referencing that because he's a piecemeal
exactly.
man. But
yeah,
then we
exactly.
say, no, unrelated to my brother's fate, I heard a story about this guy when I was a kid. Like,
yeah.
what?
Yeah.
You're totally... Because that's the thing. We had already found out it was coming out of their minds and their experiences. So I thought the jangly man was just a reference to his brother. But
right.
then, no, we hear a story about, no, it's my, you know, spooky story from when I was a kid. What are you doing, movie? Get
yeah.
it together.
And then there were parts where it just seemed like the dialogue was ADR, was, you know, additional dialogue.
Well, there was a ton of that. Yes.
Where they the red room green part there was, it seemed like it was just came out of just left field. And then the sister in the hospital, they were saying that, you know, she was.
Well, he says, my sister's gone. It's like, no, your sister
no,
ain't
your sister's
dead.
Just, she's not dead
so
even a little.
I think
she's fine.
It seems like a big change is made partway through because
yeah.
that kid, yeah. he has this, he, when they're all, when they first go to the house and they're running and hiding, that kid, like, he sort of time shifts almost, and
yeah.
he hides in the wardrobe, opens the door, and it's like yeah. this creepy fucking scene with this woman and a dog in a red
I know,
room.
Right out of The Shining.
Right, yep. Exactly. Right out of The
Right
Shining.
Out of The Shining.
Yeah, yeah. totally. Right. And then later on, he talks about a dream about a woman in a red room, and then when he sees the pale lady, it's like, that is not what you saw when you were in the house. This is
nope.
something
yeah.
else altogether.
There's a
yeah.
whole new dream you're having.
And there's
right,
like...
that is about this. And I mean, yeah. don't get me wrong, the pale lady is a very effective scene.
And I'm glad to see Sarah Huckabee Sanders found work after she...
come on! Oh my god. That was... We do drive-bys here, but that was one hell of a drive-by.
Sorry.
No, it's fine, but it's like, that's a very effective scene.
Yeah, oh, it was. Like, and again, that was very Kubrickian, I
oh,
guess.
Yeah. Yes,
you could
say. Yeah.
With the hallways, yes. And but why, you're right, why doesn't his nightmare tie in with the whole experience he had when he was in the house?
And we yeah. never come back to that.
Nope, the old lady and the dog never comes back.
Until Stella's in the house. And she time shifts and she becomes Sarah Bellows. And
yes.
then we have two different things happening in the same place at two different times, but they can yep. hear each other.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
For some reason. But
well,
then 100% you can't feel,
sure how. Yeah.
But then you find out that Sarah Bellows, okay, she was a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole story
Maybe.
About like the kids who died in the house died from mercury poisoning in the water. I couldn't.
To be fair, they had said that it was she. They believed that she poisoned children. That
but then,
is that
but
is
how does
like.
So? But there's like we're sort of dealing with it. In we have so again, sort of piling on to all of these revisions and drafts, I guess, of the story that's just a work in progress, even at this point.
Yeah.
So there's the story of Sarah Bellows who would. read to children through the wall and they would die.
Right.
But there are kids who are still disappearing even after.
Yeah.
Like this,
yeah.
the story persists. And
I mean,
think the kids are still
yeah,
disappearing.
And that's the thing. Oh, no, I don't think kids are disappearing anymore. I think it's just, we remember that there is a cultural memory that that's a thing that used to happen. I think, although you're right that the film doesn't make that clear.
Because are they disappearing or are they dead? And
yeah.
why are only some kids dead and not everyone's getting poisoned by
mercury
in the water?
Yeah.
Also, do they use mercury in paper mills?
Apparently they do there.
Yeah,
they,
like,
no, it would be
I mean, bleaches. They use lots and lots of bleaches and acids to
yeah.
turn pulp into paper, but I don't think they actually use mercury.
No, I think the mercury was like part of tanning.
Yeah, no, it's an integral part of tanning. That's what
and
happened to all of those fur.
Millinery.
Yeah, making
but
hats. And...
It wasn't a tanning. It wasn't like a, yeah, they weren't processing hides and they weren't making hats. So I don't know where the
mercury
came
from.
From.
So, and
well,
then...
No, that felt like a last minute, the writer just needed something when they were rewriting the story.
So
at
it's
the
like,
last
are they
minute.
Just giving kids mercury water to drink when they stop by the
again,
house? Like...
That's what makes those artistic flourishes so much more disappointing because you could tell there was so much effort put into, even down to the, and maybe it was just me, but the, oh God, what was the name of the clown? The Italian word for the clown that the
Piero. Right. Yes.
Piero. Yeah, he was dressed as, which harkened back to the early Michael Myers from Halloween, and all these little tiny touches that seemed to be so perfectionist to it. And it just seemed like it was a ball of twine, you know, a tightly wrapped, like, core of a golf ball that someone peeled the first layer off and it just started rolling out uncontrollably, and they just didn't know how to put it back in.
Gil Bellows,
or what was his name? The police officer.
It's Gil Bellows.
Gil Bellows.
Yeah.
Who is, and I could not tell whether he was a sympathetic character or if he was a dick.
I don't think the film ever decided.
No, and he was gone before you knew it, too.
And missed out on a perfect opportunity to quote The Thing.
Absolutely.
Why? I don't understand why you didn't. You got to be shitting me, okay? But it's like, no, you got to be fucking kidding me. Is the line you're supposed to say?
Yeah.
Come on. What's happening?
And
no, that was weird. You're right. And the one part is, there's this line where they're talking about Night of the Living Dead, right? And I'm like, based on where you live, I don't know that Night of the Living Dead came to your town yet. Because that was not in wide release in 1968.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It only came out in 1968, and that film was released very slowly.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. This movie should be set in Ohio, not Pennsylvania.
Yes, you were telling me the horror theory that all horror films are set in Ohio.
Or there's just some weird thing about Ohio and horror. I don't really know what it is, but there's just something about it.
It's only during election season here.
No, it's interesting, and I didn't get that at all, because Gil Bellows, I didn't know what was going on with him. You got these weird references. Oh, and by the way, I looked it up. I'm like, was Halloween really right next to the election? No, in real life, the election was, 6 days after Halloween. Yeah. It was not, right around the corner like it is in this one.
No, this movie takes place over the course of about a week. It starts on Halloween.
No, it starts on Halloween, and then every night somebody dies until it's over.
Yeah, so it could be, in fact, election day on the...
Well, no, but I'm saying in real life it was 6 days, and in the movie it's 3 days. But
no, the movie it's longer than enough. 3 days in the movie.
I don't know that it is longer than 3 days.
Yeah, because a kid dies every night, and four of them die.
No, the first kid dies on Halloween, the second kid dies on November 1st, and the third day is the play, and then the fourth day is the whole rest of the movie.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. Yeah, because the kid disappears in the asylum the same night they have the showdown. So it's only 4 days. I'm saying it's not far off, but it wasn't the timeline was not as tight in real life as it was in the movie. It's a minor. Yeah. It's the most minor thing at all.
It is. Yeah. It just seems, because some of them, and again, according to the end of the film, we're not sure if they are dead and begin with. But they're gone.
They've gone someplace. She thinks she can somehow write them back into existence.
Yeah. And
they all mysteriously disappeared. So maybe she can. Who knows?
Well, they were able to save Ruth from it.
Yeah.
And yet.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, and the two that seem to be more savvy of the entire lineage of this entire scary stories mythology ended up being victims of the very things that they have heard of in their past. You know, who's the Jesse Eisenberg one? I mean, he seemed like he went to the Jesse Eisenberg School of Acting.
Yeah.
Augie. You know, but he was constantly talking about what was in the food and, you know, yep. I mean, so he, of anyone's like, oh yeah, I remember the story
about the flesh putting a toe in the stew, and
he still consumes this random stew.
Yeah, this magical stew that just appeared.
When he's specifically told not to eat it.
Yeah.
And you get the ridiculous scene of them yelling at him over the radio. And I'm like, why aren't you already running to his house? If that radio works, he lives less than half a kilometer from you.
Right.
Exactly. You can be there in 1 minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they finally do leave and get there in 1 minute.
But it's already too late. He's gone.
He's already been grabbed by the lady whose toe is missing.
He's gone to essentially
the cornfield.
a floorboard. That's about it. I mean, we just see the nails that go right around to the wainscoting, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then, boom, he's gone. You know, oh, well, he's gone. They don't catch in the wall.
Just peel back the baseboard. He's in there.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, they gave it their all when looking for him.
But it's weird. And you're right about, like, there's no thing that looks more like this was reshot than the sister gets attacked. And then outside of the theater, the school, we see them say, we see her being put into an ambulance.
Right.
And they cut over to the kids. So we know she's fine. The kids start talking like she's dead.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then later, Gil Bellows is like, she's going to be in an insane asylum for the rest of her life. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
She's attacked by spiders, but, you know, that's simple. Just one, that's a really rough 5 minutes she had. I think the rest of her life is going to be fine. And then at the end of the movie, she is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not only fine, but back to her old self again, you know?
Completely fine.
Apparently learned nothing and stomps off away from them. And honestly, I thought she was rather flat. The main character, I forget her name too. Stella, right?
Stella.
You know, she has this heartfelt plea to her father in this time where she thinks she's going to die. The father doesn't even really question it and saying, oh, it was never you. It was never you. And she, you know, blames herself for it. And now she thinks, you know, that these other people, it was years ago the mother left, and yet this is still scarring
her. The central defining thing of her life.
It was only mentioned in a scene and a half, really. Like, even in the opening scene, we don't get much about it. We get one.
And I don't understand, and they don't tie in that thing with how she behaves in any way, shape, or form, or any part of her life.
Exactly. She's like any other normal kind of misfit kid. Yeah. There's no...
Also, youth of today listening to this, you don't have to move to the big city to be a writer.
No, you do not.
You want to be an artist? Maybe. If you want to be an actor? Yes. Musician? Yes. Politician? Definitely. News anchor? Of course. If you want to be a writer, you can do that anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you do not have to, and the kind of fiction, it's like, well, life experiences. The kind of fiction she's writing, you don't need life experiences.
Right, exactly.
You know, Stephen King hides in a mansion in the middle of nowhere and never sees anybody, and he puts out 2 books a year. Carrie was written in a trailer.
Yeah.
In a tiny town in the middle of nowhere.
Salinger's never even been seen in public, so yes.
Yeah.
So there you go. Like, the idea that you have to move to the city to be a speculative fiction writer is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway.
Now, question for you, for both of you. Did you read any of these books growing up?
I have one. Okay. Back in the day, Scary Stories.
Yeah.
Oh, you've still got your copy? I only ever read them in the like school library.
No, I have a copy.
I bought the 3 of them, because I read the first one, and then the second two came out, and I'd kind of grown out of it. And they, I enjoyed them probably, like most kids, more for the pictures.
Of course.
In them. And that is where I give this film credit, because they were so faithful to
the look of it. Yeah.
It really was, because, I mean, honestly, that's, you know, like Playboy, we got it for the pictures. So.
At least you can admit it.
I wholeheartedly admit that, but it's true. I mean, there's, you know, the Pale Lady was a great representation of it.
Yeah.
No, Harold the Scarecrow was spot on too.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I felt like, because they were just so slavishly devoted to recapturing that, and given again Del Toro's hand in it, I thought maybe he would be able to successfully weave that together into some sort of like trick or treat for the trick or treat set, you know?
Yeah.
Well, movie would have been way more successful
as an anthology.
An anthology.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the idea that they're like, no, we have to do it as a narrative about the woman who writes the stories and blah, 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 blah. Like, the weird part is, okay, tell me if you remember. We actually got into a conversation about this, and I'm like, I remember all the pictures really well, but I can only tell you, other than the joke that everyone remembers, I can only tell you the plot of two of the stories, period. And the crazy part is, DM then said, I think one of those isn't actually one of the stories, and you're just remembering, like, a Tales from the Crypt or something. So I'm going to tell you the plot of one I remember. You tell me if I'm crazy or not. I swear this was in either one or two, because I didn't even know there was a third one. Scary Story to Tell in the Dark. There's a story about old men in a nursing home, and, like, one of them sits by the window, and the other guys in the room are stuck off, and they can't see outside, and the one guy tells people the story of what's going off in the world to keep them entertained. And then the one guy resents and is so jealous of the window that he murders the guy so he can have the window seat. And then it turns out it was just a brick wall and the guy was making up stories to entertain people. I swear that was a scary story to tell in the dark.
I don't know. Like, to me, that kind of sounds like,
says that doesn't sound like one.
No. And it sounds like an O. Henry story.
It's a lot like an O. Henry story. You're absolutely right.
A SpongeBob episode.
But apparently Rob's not going to back me up on this either, so it's possible I have completely conflated this with something else. And I've gone my whole life thinking that was a scary story to tell in the dark, but apparently I'm wrong.
Well, crazy. You know, the first one, and that's the one that I remember looking at least as a child. And again, one of the best lines in there was from the one Chuck character who's like, when they try to burn the book, and the book comes back and he said, this is why I don't read.
Yeah. That was funny.
That was very funny.
That was funny.
But yeah, that is a lot of those stories. It's funny because I remember hearing them from either other. The book itself was never that strong because a lot of it was based on folklore.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of them were just,
it's a catalog of urban legends.
Yeah.
And as you say, like the Vendor Viper. Jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, again, it was hard to discern exactly which ones. I mean, there's obviously the Me Tie Do Tie Walker was one because that was so, and the Big Toe, but still some of the other ones are so kind of generic because they've been passed down through generations that it's just, and been in various forms of literature somewhere.
I looked up Me Tie Dodie Walker because we were having a conversation about this after the movie. I'm like, I don't remember that story at all. What does it mean? It's got to be some kind of gibberish that like it's close to English. No, it's actually one of the jokes.
Yeah.
It's one of the joke stories.
Yeah.
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 Really?
It was just a song.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I didn't remember that at all.
Because I looked at the story, because it's in the first book. All these stories are in the first book.
Yep.
And, like, you're supposed to read the story, and you're like, you keep repeating, Me Tie Dodie Walker, and you're telling this creepy story, and then you just yell, ah!
Yep, that's it. That's exactly it.
It was scare your friend.
It was the precursor to those famous YouTube videos back in
where they flash you with the thing.
Do you see that?
Yeah.
And you get the
Yes. Okay, watch the kitten zombie face.
Exactly. So yeah, that's exactly what it was. And I remember that because I actually showed that to my children when they were far too young because they have them read. Actually, there's a professional reader that reads all these stories on YouTube. There's a YouTube channel devoted to all of these.
Oh, wow.
And they have, you know, a really good kind of Boris Karloff-y, you know, kind of voice reading them. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Plus, I didn't want to have to go through all the effort myself to do it, so I would just
just watch this video. Some other guy
save yourself some time and effort. I'm going to go get myself a drink.
You guys knock yourself out. Here.
We're learning a lot about you today, Rob.
Yes.
All of it good. But yeah, and I think fundamentally there's a lot of ways they could have done this thing better. But the one that, like, and that's the thing, the moment you first told me, DM, that there was going to be this movie, mm-hmm. like ages and ages ago, you told me they were doing that Del Toro was doing a Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark because it showed up in the press and we may have done it as part of random crap here on the show.
Right.
And my first thought was, oh, well, it's going to be an anthology.
Yep.
It didn't occur to me that it could be like, anything but an anthology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else would you do? And the answer is a half-assed It with a lot more Goonies thrown in.
Yeah, it really was. I feel like that felt like that was done almost after they filmed those sequences. Like those sequences, I felt like Del Toro had a big hand in creating all of those very atmospheric chase scenes and the encounters with the beasts. And then
they reverse engineered the movie around those scenes.
Exactly. Let's stick in Scooby-Doo gang and we'll have them solve mysteries around in the mystery machine, you know.
Yeah.
In between, and even that they fucked up because
and let's cram some racism in there too, just because.
Yeah, some racism in
there. World we live in.
Really distract, you know, get away from what the movie's about for a while.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And let's throw in a bunch of references. Let's set it in a time frame. Hell, if at least they put it in the '80s, there's enough pop culture knowledge of the '80s right now floating around that most kids would be able to get that. But when you throw it back in the '60s and you talk about the draft, it's just, it's not going to resonate. It's not.
Well, it's just because I think it's just, it's really clinging to this idea of the end of innocence.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like the movie even starts with Stella Narra with her voiceover talking about this is the year that I stopped being a child or something along those lines.
Right. Oh, right. Right.
Christ. What are we in for?
Get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating. It could have been a ton better, and I'm just sad that like the really great, you know, set pieces were not in service of something bigger and better. Again, like a movie about a bunch of kids at a sleepover reading these stories to each other, and then something scary happens at the end.
Totally.
Like,
right.
Oh, also within the is that so hard to write, people? I think the three of us just accidentally wrote what this movie should have been.
Yeah.
But anyway, but the thing that, one thing that gets me at the end of the movie is Ramon gets to go off and join the army. And I'm like, aren't you not in jail for murdering that cop? Because when the rest of the police department left, there was a guy in jail for draft dodging and an alive Gil Bellows.
Right.
Then the next day, a guy had escaped from prison and Gil Bellows was dead on the ground with a snapped neck.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's not in jail for the rest of his life.
And what happened to the poor police dog?
Oh, that's right. He ran away. He's okay.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he came back the next day for breakfast. I'm sure he's fine.
All right.
You don't need to worry about him.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
But yeah, it is weird, this thing. Like, it's just strange that it didn't have a stronger structure to use. Because great visuals, fundamentally creepy stories, but then just like, your generic, you know, eight millimeter. Oh my God. Super 8. Whoops. Oh, very different movies.
Well, we have a scene where they try to figure out who the Sarah Bellows person was and what happened to her family. So, you know. Yeah,
okay. It's not that different from that. And it involved
children.
You got me there.
Parallel tracks there. 8mm and Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
A comparison no one has ever made before for a very good reason.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Now, if Nicolas Cage was in this one, man, it would have been a different film altogether.
So, you know what he is in? I just found this out. I don't know if this is news to you guys. Color Out of Space.
He is?
Really?
Yeah.
We're watching the hell out of that.
Oh, my God.
It's my favorite story.
Lovecraft meets Nicolas Cage, the dream is alive.
Yeah.
This is going to be fantastic. All right.
Yeah.
So I guess that's that. Do we have any final thoughts? Or do we want to leave it with my terrible 8mm confusion?
Yeah, I don't think there's a finer punctuation mark that could be put on than that one.
All right. So, yes. Do we have any narcissism we would like to watch before we wrap things up?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, so, new episodes of Chicks and Dicks and True North Crime coming your way. I said that last week and I still haven't posted anything. I'll get on top of it.
Also, just, yeah, that's going to be great. I'm very excited to hear the new episodes. I'm not saying I'm personally disappointed in you, but I was going to hit the treadmill over the weekend. I'm like, oh, I'll listen to those new episodes.
Oh, sorry.
That's fine.
I was apartment hunting.
Totally fine.
Which is its own horror show.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
All right. For me, you know, just nothing big. I will hopefully have something to announce in the next couple of weeks, so fingers crossed on that. But for those of you who have been demanding it, the Criminal Minds Season 10 reviews are live. They're going up one every 2 days, and we're going to keep that schedule up for the entire rest of the show, Criminal Minds.
Have people been demanding it?
Oh my god, like every day there's comments saying, when are these coming back? It's weird.
You're like, Mom, leave me alone.
I mean, I do run the most popular, you know, Criminal Minds podcast on the internet.
So, yeah. Also the only Criminal Minds podcast. Because the other one's folded.
The other one's folded due to lack of interest.
Chalk one up for stamina.
Damn right. Rob, anything you want people to check out?
Sure. Anyone who is going to be happens to find themselves in Southern Delaware on Thursday, we are going to be screening an audience participation of Labyrinth.
Oh, fun!
How is the audience going to participate?
Oh, we have purchased for the audience, and we're going to cue them in certain scenes, obviously. But we're going to cue them in. We're providing bubbles for when he blows the glass.
Nice!
We've included Mardi Gras masks that they can wear to the ball, the coup de grace is we have purchased, I think, 100 miniature whoopee cushions for the eternal bog of stench.
Oh, no!
Yay! Yeah. Oh, Labyrinth is such a good movie.
Yeah. So
rocks to throw at the screen when Udo calls the rocks. No,
yeah, no, we're gonna
maybe not. Maybe they want the screen to be there the next day. Just putting that out there.
Fine. Yeah, we've eliminated that and glitter from the end, and also pointing out the massive cod piece that he's wearing.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. So
all right. So I guess that's that. So until, oh yes, that's, I think we've given our link. So is there any other way to get in touch with us?
Oh, you can visit the AVOD's blog. Oh my God, at the AVOD.com. You can leave us a comment there and tell us how you would better scary stories to tell in the dark. You can send us an email at the AVOD@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you're listening on an app, give us 5 stars. Just because.
You have a spider crawling out of your face right now.
I might. More than one, actually. I've got this big pimple.
Oh, that's terrible. So, until next time, I've been Count Fargelon.
I've been DM.
And I've been a spider creeping out of her face.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Bye.
Good night.